Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
High atop the Milkpacking District in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all-important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
The President and Congress strike a deal on raising the debt ceiling. A burglar smears a home and the family dog with peanut butter and jelly, and hundreds gather for Portland's Slut Walk.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed, for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know from Monday, August 1st, 2011. Well, hold on to your hats and keys, people. The FBI is investigating a new lead in the D.B. Cooper case.
Don't mock me.
The nation's only unsolved commercial hijacking. According to the Seattle Post-Intelligencer, the lead is focused on a man not previously associated with the 1971 case.
Oh, whatever.
An item belonging to the man was being analyzed at the FBI forensic lab in Quantico, Virginia. The FBI did not say what sort of item it was, but did say agents were unsure whether fingerprints could be pulled from it. They also did not release the man's name.
I've got your item belonging to the man right here.
DNA samples from the item will be compared to a tie clip left behind on the hijacked plane. The suspect jumped from the plane and was never found. Some agents believe he was killed. A boarding pass with the name Dan Cooper on it was found, as was a discarded parachute.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the money the suspect stole the night he hijacked the plane was never recovered.
We're going to continue to publish this story twice a year just to irritate Rick Emerson until the day he dies. Can I just tell you the number of people? Our good friend Andy Crixa posted that on my Facebook page on Sunday morning, I think. And then within about 5 minutes, like 17 other people had sent it my way. All of them are sort of thinly veiled variations on ha-ha, as they, because they know that it drives me mental. So thanks a lot. I appreciate that. And by the way, that's not even, it's not even a goddamn American newspaper. It's a freaking British newspaper that published that. Now it's like a cross-continental taunting of me that's happening. My enemies are everywhere.
Okay, now I fail to understand what the connection is with you and D.B. Cooper. I Why does this chap your hide so badly?
Because if you grow up in the Northwest, you have to hear about... I mean, don't get me wrong. I love D.B. Cooper, like people the world over, and especially people in the great city of Portland, Oregon, love D.B. Cooper because he is a folk hero everywhere, but especially here because this is where, you know, it happened in Portland. And so... So this is a thing, especially growing up in this part of the country, that constantly is in the news, especially every Thanksgiving, because it happened on November 22nd, 23rd, I think is when it was. And so every Thanksgiving, they just schlep out, some guy who knew some guy who always acted a little kind of squirrely, and he seemed to have a lot of parachute knowledge, and then one day he moved from the neighborhood, and we never saw him again. And then the somber-faced news guy, the dick, looks at the camera and goes, "Could this man have been D.B. Cooper?" Investigators aren't sure. No, he wasn't D.B. Cooper. It's like when they would do the thing every year on the Science Channel, which thankfully they've just sort of laid back on, where they would say, and now investigators are asking, have they finally proven that the Loch Ness Monster exists? No, they haven't. Stop it. And it took me, the better part of, I think, 30 years to just quit watching things like that when they said, coming up tonight, have we at long last cracked the mystery of... You haven't. You haven't. Anytime somebody says, have we finally determined the identity of, insert, mythical... They haven't. Have they finally figured out who committed whatever crime? No. Have they finally proven that some cryptozoologist dream creature exists? No, they haven't. And yet that does not stop them from continuing to do it every single year. Now, maybe this time is different. But as Andy himself said when he noted this on the Facebook page, when he posted this, he said, "I should," and this is him speaking about himself, he said, "I should know better than to get all ratcheted up about this because they never find anything, yet here is another alleged lead in the case of D.B. Cooper."
Okay.
Jesus God. It's just one of those things where I just want to skip ahead like 50 years or till I'm dead and know one way or the other. Like I just, even if you just told me, they will eventually figure it out, but not for another 25 years. Like, if I was somehow had, like, a way-forward machine, and they said, you know, and, like, the great Gazoo was able to show me my future, and he said, "Look, dum-dum, in the future, they figure out who D.B. Cooper is in 25 years. At least then I would go, okay, well, they figured it out. But this is neither one nor the other. This is not it being a mystery forever, and this is not solving it. This is just continually playing out this thread of they think they may be close. They're never close.
Also, doesn't the FBI have better things to be doing with their time? I mean, this was like, what, 40?
Nah, the government never 40, forgets.
50 years ago?
No, you steal from the man will find you. Doesn't matter how long it takes.
Because there's like, I think there's some real crime going on.
This is a real crime.
Yeah, but it was like 50 years ago.
Well, you don't have to convince me. I'm just saying, if you screw the government, they'll screw you back. It doesn't matter how long it takes.
Well, then I will just say, for your benefit, if you yourself are D.B. Cooper and you are listening to this right now, or if you actually know D.B. Cooper,
mm-hmm.
Could you have him just send an email to Rick Emerson and or
please,
just give him a call?
Please
just
don't.
Let him know
don't,
one way or the other
don't
what's going
email
on.
Me and say you're D.B. Cooper. Don't do it. Just stop. Stop for the love of God. Somebody says, why do you even care if they find him? No effect on you whatsoever. None of the crap we read here has any effect on me.
No, that's true.
I mean, really, honestly, of the things we read here, 98% of it, of the things I do in my life, 98% of it has no lasting effect on me whatsoever. My thing with D.B. Cooper, I'm not a nutcase, but like I don't sit at home and study D.B. Cooper or something, but it is one of those things where I just want to freaking know. Because otherwise it just becomes like a thing that just sits there and just it becomes like pills on a sweater that just irritate you. I think it is like how people of a certain generation don't even really care at this point who shot Kennedy. They just want to know so they can quit thinking about it. It's like when you're missing a tooth and your tongue just keeps going back and probing the hole where the tooth used to be. That's how I think people are about certain crimes that happened in their time, like the freaking Lindbergh baby or whatever. You know, where they just want to know, like, what was the deal with that? And then, so that's the thing here.
Well, it's also, I guess, this regional thing, which I was never privy to growing up in the Los Angeles area. That, you know, it wasn't until I moved away from the Los Angeles area that I realized that, you know, people do have this ridiculous, overblown sense of pride and interest in crimes and movies that were shot in their town and what have you. Because growing up in the L.A. area, there's never any sense of, and it happened right here. Because everything happens right there.
That's not true, though. The difference with D.B. Cooper, it's not even that it's a regional thing. Because in L.A., they have the Black Dahlia, which is the same thing. Black Dahlia.
Yeah, but we don't have like Black Dahlia festivals and nights and bars where like
Here's
we celebrate
why.
Black Dahlia's birthday.
And I'll tell you why, though. This is the difference. Because the Black Dahlia, the reason you don't, and there is a fair amount of industry based around the Black Dahlia in books and movies and whatever, the reason you don't have like Black Dahlia half off night at a bar is because it's a murder, as opposed to D.B. Cooper, which is a caper.
Oh.
Didn't harm anybody, didn't kill anybody, probably never even had a weapon, committed no violence against anyone, in fact, did not harm anybody except, you know, you could argue that, you know, the government by taking their money. And also, it is the only unsolved hijacking in American history. That's the other thing. It's the only unsolved skyjacking in the history of the country. The only one. And I mean,
also played by Treat Williams in the movie, which always helps.
Indeed,
he's charming.
Also resulted in the modification of airplanes. Every airplane you see today has a device installed so that the back cannot be opened in flight, which is called a Cooper's Bane. So, changed the way that airlines in America operate. So that is why. I mean, it is the difference between. That's why Ocean's 11 is not not a crime film. They always call it a caper film because it has a sense of sort of fun-loving zeal and etc. So is the case with D.B. Cooper. Plus, again, he stole from the man, and everybody likes somebody who steals from the man.
He's a modern-day Robin Hood.
No, not so much. He's just a guy who steals.
He just stole stuff.
I mean, if he gives to me, then I mean that would be you know.
Again, if you are D.B. Cooper. And you want to give Rick Emerson some of your money. It's probably all spent by now.
No, don't even get me started. Don't even get me started on the D.B. Cooper money. Don't even $6,000 for a goddamn $20 bill. Don't even. Anyway, you're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. God damn it. It's Monday, August 1st, 2011. Thank you for joining us.
And Rick is irascible.
I'm not irascible. I just, you know. Just bugs me. And so forth. Coming up later on this hour, Science on the March, also your entertainment news and whatnot. If you want to get this later on via iTunes, you can do that. You can also get it as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or at legionofnews.com. That is Cascadia.fm, legionofnews.com. You can also get it with you on your mobile device if you like. That is mobile.cascadia.fm, mobile.cascadia.fm. And do not forget, if you want to hear the Rick Emerson radio program, that is coming up next hour at rickemersonshow.com. That is rickemersonshow.com. Here is Don Taylor.
Former NFL quarterback and University of Oregon football player Joey Harrington was injured Sunday night while riding his bicycle in southeast Portland. Lieutenant Robert King, a police spokesman, said Harrington was struck while riding his bike at the intersection of Southeast Foster Road and Southeast 88th Avenue. The traffic division was called out to conduct the investigation, and officers determined Harrington was traveling west on Foster when he was struck from behind by a vehicle. Officers identified the driver as 26-year-old Derek Johnson. He was driving a Toyota RAV4 and was traveling west on Southeast Foster when he struck Harrington's rear wheel, causing the crash. Johnson stayed on the scene and cooperated with officers. Harrington was transported to the local hospital with non-life-threatening injuries, and Johnson was ticketed for following too close. The only reason this is a story, of course, is because the guy was a former NFL quarterback. He is reportedly in Portland for the Brian Grant Foundation fundraiser Shake It Till We Make It. The two-day fundraiser is being held both Sunday and Monday. Harrington played at the University of Oregon and then was drafted by the Detroit Lions, where he started as their quarterback. He went on to play for the Miami Dolphins, the Atlanta Falcons, and the New Orleans Saints.
Shake It Till We Make It sounds like something else.
Yes,
I don't know
it
what
does.
Specifically, but it doesn't sound...
It sounds naughty.
It sounds different is what it sounds.
Do we have audio for the debt crisis thing, or should I just...
We have the Clinton audio, and we have the Clinton audio about that, and I'm working on some other stuff.
Okay.
I had a little bit of a computer issue this morning, but
right.
There's the... we have the audio from Hillary Clinton on that, I believe, speaking to some of our Asian comrades.
Oh, all right. Well, the President Obama did announce that a tentative deal has been struck to raise the nation's debt ceiling. The process has been messy, the president said. It's taken far too long. The deal still has to be approved by both houses of Congress. President said, we're not done yet. I want to urge members of both parties to do the right thing with your vote. Racing the clock to avoid a government default, President Barack Obama and Republican congressional leaders closed in Sunday night on a compromise to permit U.S. borrowing by the Treasury in exchange for more than $2 trillion in long-term spending cuts. But no votes seemed likely in either House or Congress until Monday at the earliest, just one day before the deadline to raise the federal debt limit and enable the government to keep paying its bills. Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell said the two sides are really, really close to a deal after months of partisan fighting. That's his quote, by the way, is really, really close.
Did he say they're hella close?
They're hella close. They're supposedly everyone is on board with the latest deal, which would increase the debt limit by roughly $900 billion and come with nearly $1 trillion in spending cuts. A new joint committee of lawmakers, which will be named later, will be in charge of finding further cuts to the tune of $1.5 trillion by November, with the goal of enacting those cuts by year's end. Supposedly, this will not currently affect Medicare, Social Security, although they are going to be looking in those programs for things that they can shave away.
They're going to be looking in their direction.
Yeah, they're not going to be dumping the programs entirely. They're just going to be kneecapping them.
So, Social Security, nice story you've got here. Shame if something were to happen to it.
So, in Hong Kong, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton tried to reassure delegates at a meeting of business leaders that the U.S. has no intention of defaulting on its financial
obligations. I'll get you the money! Look at your heart!
I'd gladly pay you Thursday for a hamburger today.
Right, this is Clinton.
I well remember the government shutdown of the 1990s. I had a front row seat for that one. But this is how an open and democratic society ultimately comes together to reach the right solutions.
Reed, if you cross us now, I will remember this someday when I am president, and I will destroy you all!
Clinton offers assurances that U.S. lawmakers will eventually work out their differences.
Really? Is that sort of, is that like when William H. Macy's just sort of like, I swear I'll get you the money. You have my, I swear to God.
I am confident that Congress will do the right thing.
Not confident at all.
And secure a deal on the debt ceiling.
No one's confident
in anything. And work with President Obama to take the steps necessary to improve our long-term fiscal outlook.
Not going to happen.
So thousands of programs, including the Park Service, the Labor Department, and housing, could be trimmed to levels last seen many, many, many years ago. So,
Does it actually say many, many, many years
ago?
No,
I added the many, many.
It didn't say many moons ago?
Many moons ago.
Okay.
But,
a long-ass time ago.
Basically, to sum up this whole story, we are all screwed.
Well, I could have told you that.
Yeah, so
I could have told you that like a year ago.
There you go.
Before this story even started, I could have told you that.
Things will get worse. Yay! Okay.
Huzzah!
A Seattle man got quite a surprise last week when he entered his home and found everything, including his dog, covered in peanut butter and jelly. According to a police report, peanut butter and jelly was found smeared on the floors and furniture at a home on Meridian Avenue North in Seattle on July 21st. Even the man's dog was covered with peanut butter and jelly. There was also vomit found in the bed of the victim's daughter. Oddly enough, the only item found missing from the home was a jar of peanut butter. The victim has...
Is it missing because it was...
Probably because it was used to smear.
So it's not missing, it's just, it's been moved to the dog.
And perhaps they took the jar itself with them, you know, because you don't want to leave the evidence.
Right, sure.
The victim does have a suspect in mind. Apparently one of his daughter's friends, a known drug user, smeared lotion all over another friend's apartment the previous night.
He didn't want the hose. I mean, it's either or. I mean, come on. It's not something for nothing.
Yeah.
All right. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Today we'll talk to Mr. Aaron Duran with The Week in Geek. Also, is that accurate over there?
Yes, it is.
All right. Geek Watch coming up today. Nazi Watch coming up today. And fun with grammar, or possibly less than fun with grammar. Here is Don Taylor.
A group gathered Saturday at Portland's Terry Shrunk Plaza to take a stand against sensual violence and the misconceptions surrounding it.
Sensual violence is the best kind.
Yes. The rally and walk was called Portland Slut Walk. It's part of an international movement to stop blaming victims of sexual crimes. The Slut Walk movement began in Toronto in April after a police officer told a victim that women should stop dressing like sluts if they don't want to be sexually assaulted. Local co-founder Sophia St. James said the group wants the message to reach all groups and communities. It's just not women that get raped or assaulted. It's men. It's transgendered individuals, St. James said. A lot of the assault and rape that happens within the LGBTQ community is sexualized.
In other news, you should apparently call her for a good time.
Hundreds of people also gathered today in New Delhi, India, to hold a slut walk. Crime statistics in India show rape cases are on the rise. but authorities say most cases still go unreported because the victims are afraid of being blamed.
It seems like in a paternal society like that, maybe identifying yourself as a slut is not the best way to minimize the violence that will be committed against you.
Yeah, I'm putting this aside for like the next hour if we want to talk about it, because I find myself torn about. I support the message they're putting forth.
Me
but
too.
I have problems with the use of the word slut.
Oh, I have no issue with that whatsoever. We should talk about that next hour.
Yes.
That'll be next hour at rickemersonshow.com if that's the sort of thing you're into. Yeah.
You know, sluts.
If you're into sluts, and who isn't, so to speak, that's next hour at rickemersonshow.com. Also, drunks. Here's Don Taylor.
And speaking of people gathering in public places to protest things, in response to a growing number of protests against the country's ruling party, Russia's neighbor Belarus published legislation Friday that would prevent large groups of people from engaging in planned gatherings at public locations, even if they're doing nothing.
Belarus. Can you do the Fandango? Yeah, that was easier
that
than
was
I even
so easy.
Thought it would be. Yeah.
The move appeared to be an effort to discourage organizers who have mobilized protests more and more online, getting flash mobs to appear in the capital of Minsk, doing everything from clapping to walking in a coordinated public fashion. The Times reports on the language of the law, saying it prohibits joint mass presence of citizens in a public place that has been chosen beforehand, including an outdoor space and at a scheduled time for the purpose of a form of action or inaction that has been planned beforehand, and is a form of public expression of the public or political sentiments or protest.
I'm so lost in this story, maybe because it takes place in Belarus.
Well, Belarus, which is widely considered to be the only remaining...
party town.
No,
Knights of Pythias.
The word I'm... When there's just one guy...
Spray cheese.
...ruling everything. What do you call that?
A dictatorship.
Dictatorship! For some reason, the word was just gone from my brain. It's considered the only remaining, like, actual full-on dictatorship in Europe. And so what they are doing now is because of the internet and such, people, they're not actually, most of the protests are not actually, because people know it's a dictatorship, so, you know, they can be disappeared and tortured and stuff. So basically, they're doing things like organizing flash mobs on the internet and showing up in public and just standing around and clapping. Basically, just to make the point that we can organize if and we so choose.
As long as you don't cause trouble.
Right.
Apparently. As long as you're just clapping, you can do whatever you like.
So far, they have all been completely peaceful protests, but they are drawing more and more people, and they are happening more and more often. And so now Belarus has laid down a law that you are not allowed to gather in large numbers anywhere for any reason, no matter what it is you're doing. Even if you're doing nothing. You're not supposed to.
Mustn't. Bad.
A number of citizens over the spring and summer have been calling for President Alexander Lukashenko to step down. The country has a history of denying permits to protesters, and the latest step tries to further justify authorities' use of force against organizers. The BBC reported on a protest of several thousand at the end of June, where participants and a few journalists at the silent rally were violently rounded up and thrown in unmarked police vehicles.
Is this just a lot of mimes just sort of walking against the wind and then trying to find the signal for, you know, like, must stop political oppression now?
Right. And that's all fine until you start doing the I'm trapped in a tiny box. And that can, of course, be considered, you know, a political statement.
And then you end up trapped in a tiny box, ironically enough.
Right. And then you're riding an imaginary bicycle and it just goes to hell.
Okay.
So there you go. That's happening. A father and son taking a stroll on the beach Friday in Stanwood, Washington, now have their own big fish tail after they discovered a giant jellyfish washed ashore. "We were just stunned when we saw it at first," said Sherman Pike. The monster sea creature Sherman Pike and his son Oliver found is a lion's mane jellyfish measuring more than 4 feet across. "All the colors and coming out of the center, it looks sort of like armored plates," he said. There's something else entirely, but really just awesome to see. The Pikes say they've seen plenty of jellyfish in and around the Puget Sound, but have never seen a giant 4-foot jellyfish on the shore. It washed back out to the sound, and this is my favorite line in the story, by the way. This is courtesy of CNN, so this is CNN writing. "The jellyfish washed back out into the sound and is no longer where the Pikes found it."
It's called the tide. It washes up and then it washes back out.
Also, there's...
Do they live there?
Also, there's an apostrophe in Pikes in this story, in this line.
Okay. I mean...
CNN.
Are they... They're not from Nebraska or something. Presumably, they know how the water works.
Right.
Water giveth and taketh away.
It feels like somebody wrote this story and just had absolutely no idea what the last sentence of it should be. So it's like, how can I conclude this riveting tale? The jellyfish washed back out into the sound and is no longer where the pikes found it.
Okay. Pikes,
P-I-K-E apostrophe S.
Maybe they were trying to do like a, maybe they were pasting that word from elsewhere in the story and they were talking about fishmongers.
CNN.
You know, nobody's a beefmonger.
No, not really.
Somebody ought to be. Somebody ought to open a beefmongery.
Yeah, a radishmonger.
Yeah. I just like the word beefmonger.
Beefmonger. Again, that sounds kind of dirty.
It's going to be the name of my porn company.
Kind of Beau Breedlove-ish.
A beefmonger production. Mm. And then it'll be a hot chick in a bikini and a steer.
Wow.
Animated, sort of in the beginning.
Wow. Yep. Let's do science.
Here's your, and the assembled masses scream in adulation. Here's your science on the march for whatever the hell day this is. Monday, August 1st, 2011. Here at Cascadia.fm, this is brought to you by Squires Electric at 503-252-1609 or SquiresElectric.com. If you like, you can also go to Facebook.com. That is Facebook.com/SquiresElectric. Facebook.com/SquiresElectric. SquiresElectric. Facebook.com/SquiresElectric. They're licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, they will make your life easier. If it has to do with, let's say you're on the Nostromo. And you got one of those ash units that's just going all wonky on. You need somebody to quickly, you know, get up there and just get the rewiring done. Stat, you can have that taken care of. That is 503-252-1609 or SquiresElectric.com. They, in fact, wired the entire studio from which we broadcast, and they can wire your home or business as well, or work on upgrade, repair, installation, anything that you might need done. Squires Electric, please tell me you heard it here. And it's Squires Electric. If it has to do with wires or wiring, they will make your life easier. Here is Don Taylor.
Doctors were baffled and probably a little unbelieving when English patient Stephen Mabbott told them, I can hear my eyeballs moving.
That's a lie. No one can hear their eyeballs moving.
But they finally diagnosed a rare ear condition in which sounds inside the body are heard very loudly. Stephen, 57, could also hear his own heart beating, and when he chewed food, the noise was deafening. The father of two was experiencing autophony, one of the symptoms of superior canal dehiscence syndrome, a bizarre illness that was unknown until 10 years ago. At first, he noticed the internal sound of his own voice was beginning to drown out everything else around him. Over 6 years, the condition worsened as other bodily noises joined in. Stephen said, I was sitting quietly alone in the house one evening, and I suddenly heard this quite loud scratchy noise, like sandpaper being rubbed on wood. I was quite alarmed and looked around, wondering what it was. Then I noticed the noise was coming every time I moved my eyes. I thought I was going mad. The first symptoms appeared around 2005. I found if I raised my voice, I'd get a vibration in my head. If I was eating a bag of crisps, the crunching noise drowned out people speaking.
A bag of crisps.
Then I found I would be hearing my heartbeat. Sleep was pretty much impossible with the beating of my heart and the scratching of my eyes. It was like trying to drop off with a noisy workshop in my head. Doctors put it all down to congestion for a long time, gave him sprays, drops, tests, antibiotics. But this year, a CT scan revealed a tiny hole in the temporal bone in Stephen's skull. This meant fluid from the semicircular canals of his inner ear was leaking into his brain and conducting bodily sounds.
Do not want.
An operation cured the problem. Some guy from somewhere in England who treated him said, it is a very unusual condition and difficult to spot. There may be one case a year per 500,000 people in the UK. New studies in California and Wisconsin reveal that many urban sewer pipes are failing and germ-ridden filth is bleeding out of them. The studies tracked material hemorrhaging into storm drains. These pipes, which channel their contents into streams and coastal waters, are designed to collect fairly clean rainwater and runoff from watered lawns. Yet raw sewage at times constituted nearly 20% of one local storm drain's flow. This was from a study at the University of California, Santa Barbara. Another study at the University of Wisconsin found the same thing. Sandra McClellan said that her group reported finding a bacterial indicator of human feces in samples from all 45 stormwater outflows in the Milwaukee area that it monitored over 4 years. The data showed that sewage contamination is nearly ubiquitous in the urban environment. In Santa Barbara, Holden's team mapped areas where sewer pipes were above, next to, or below storm pipes, and then added a fluorescing dye to sewage. Using an automated sensor, they monitored the dye in nearby storm drains. In one system, the dye showed up storm drains within a half an hour. In a second one, it took between 2 and 74 hours to emerge in storm waters. In both cases, two other bacterial indicators of human feces accompanied the dye. The California study is among the first that definitively links leaky sewers to problems with water contamination in rivers, oceans, and lakes. It informs an understanding of how decaying water infrastructure can threaten human health and the environment.
I gotta say, I don't like feces contaminating anything, really.
No.
I think feces contaminating it. Feces and water, it's not like chocolate and peanut butter. It doesn't really go together like you think it would.
Yeah.
No.
They also point out that a lot of drinking water mains, which are susceptible to corrosion and small breaks, have been laid down near sewer pipes.
Yeah, that seems like a poor choice.
Yeah. And apparently, and they say that nothing can get in while they're under pressure and the water is flowing, but they do sometimes have pressure problems where the pressure is lower. And at that point, stuff from the sewers
stuff
could leak right into the drinking water.
Yes.
Yeah. Hooray. NASA's upcoming mission to Jupiter can't get much greener than this. A solar-powered windmill-shaped spacecraft. The robotic explorer Juno is set to become the most distant probe ever powered by the sun. Juno is equipped with 3 tractor-trailer-sized solar panels for its 2-billion-mile journey into the outer solar system. It will be launched Friday morning aboard an unmanned Atlas V rocket, barely 2 weeks after NASA's final space shuttle flight. The shuttle's design is giving extra oomph, it actually does say oomph here, to the $1.1 billion voyage to the largest and probably oldest planet in the solar system. It's the first of 3 high-profile astronomy missions coming up for NASA in the next 4 months. NASA's long-range blueprint would have astronauts reaching an asteroid by 2025 and Earth's next-door neighbor Mars a decade later, although there's still uncertainty surrounding the rockets that are needed to get us to Mars.
Is on the diagram, is it just sort of, does it just have a guy with like a huge slingshot and then a bunch of Lilliputians sort of pulling it back and not actual method of locomotion?
It's kind of like that Marvin the Martian cartoon where he's like, yes, anyway. A genetically modified female beagle named Tegan glows bright fluorescent green under ultraviolet light, according to a paper published by the journal Genesis. In the scientific record books, Tegan joins a red fluorescent puppy named Ruppy and Mr. Green Jeans, the cat, as all being human-modified animals that can glow. Byung-Chun Lee, the co-author of the Genesis paper, said, "The entire body of the dog glows. One can witness a slightly yellower change in the color of the dog's skin, but to the naked eye, fluorescence cannot be seen without the presence of UV light and goggles."
Does he also say at the end of the paper, "Also, there was no reason to make this possible"?
Lee is director of the Seoul National University Hospital for Animals in Korea and a professor in the Department of Theriogenology and Biotechnology. They inserted a DNA fragment that controls the expression of a green fluorescent gene into the dog's cells. They next extracted DNA from a dog oocyte, an immature reproductive cell, and injected the fluorescent modified dog cells into it. And then the third step, and now, seriously, we are getting into serious Bruce Banner territory here. The next step was to use a process known as somatic cell nuclear transfer to generate an embryo. They don't explain to you how they did that, but they did.
It's a thing that happened.
The resulting embryo was then transferred into a surrogate dog mother. After 60 days of pregnancy, she gave birth to a glowing puppy.
Why? What? Okay. Why are they doing any of this? Why? Why? Why?
Well, they said that a dog has 268 genetic type diseases that are similar to those of humans. Also, the dog has physiological and anatomical similarities with humans. So,
it's one of those diseases like it stubs its toe on the way to the bathroom in the middle of the night and we got to figure out how to make it glow so that doesn't happen. There's no reason to do this.
The reason they're doing this, and this is horrible. This is horrible,
yes.
Horrible.
What's
horrible.
The horrible part?
The genes injected to make the dog glow could be substituted with genes that trigger fatal diseases. Therefore, they could make dogs that have like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's disease. And then they can experiment on them to try and cure it.
So we can actually take things that are healthy, then create variants of them that have Parkinson's, just so we can probably not cure it with them.
Right.
That's great.
So we can just make dogs with Alzheimer's disease.
Okay.
because we can.
Well, I mean, and plus it's fun, Don.
On the other hand, at some point in the future, you might be able to buy a glowing dog.
And I've always wanted one of those. You know, the thing is that I ask and I ask and nobody ever gets me one.
The New Yorker now has roughly 100,000 iPad readers, a fifth of what of which have shelled out $59.99 for a year's subscription to the magazine's simplistic text-heavy tablet app, according to the New York Times. Some back-of-the-envelope math for those who've done 20,000 paid subscriptions times $60 is $1.2 million. The bulk of the remaining 80,000 readers are print subscribers who got their app free as part of the magazine's promotional deal. But when taken together with those who paid directly for an iPad app, the magazine's digital total is the highest of any iPad edition sold by Condé Nast.
And this is which publication?
The New Yorker.
And so, well, that doesn't surprise me, actually, because it seems like that is the... It seems like that demographic is probably the most likely, or one of the most likely to actually... to proactively seek out that information and to use that kind of technology.
Yeah.
Not just as a status thing, but also because there's more disposable income, they're probably the most wired demographic. I mean, I'm painting with broad strokes, but it seems like that's borne out by the information.
Yeah, Condé Nast also publishes GQ, Vanity Fair, and Wired. But the New Yorker is the highest digital subscription that they have of all of their magazines. They unveiled the new app earlier this spring, opting to focus almost exclusively on presenting its articles in a clean, readable format that comes much closer to the printed page than most websites. That was really important to us, said the magazine's deputy editor, to create an app that's all about reading. McCarthy said that while the app does include the occasional multimedia component, say audio of a poet reading their work, the default setting was to keep things simple. We think about whether or not to add any value. If they don't add any value, they're out the window. Of course, the magazine would appear to have a big advantage when it comes to selling iPad apps. As you mentioned just a moment ago, the typical reader is much more likely to actually own an iPad in the first place.
Yeah.
iPad users tend to inhabit households with annual incomes of more than $100,000, much like readers of The New Yorker.
And does it, you know, the app that it really needs to have on this is an app that occasionally just screams out, "I'm reading The New Yorker! You're not!"
I think the cartoons are funny. I get them.
Or just some sort of a back projection, so it occasionally just lets people know that you are that you're of a better class than they are likely to be.
Or it has like a little holographic thing in the iPad that projects the face of that guy in the little top hat and the monocle onto your head.
Or just every now and again, just Spalding Gray appears in holograph form and just goes, "Hello, oh, Sports Illustrated, how droll," and then vanishes again.
That's all the science.
All right, there you go. That's a good story to go on. And there's your Science of the March brought to you by Squires Electric. You can find them at facebook.com/SquiresElectric or SquiresElectric.com. You can also call them if you like. It's 503. If that's your bag, 503-252-1609. They are the proud sponsors of this, your Science of the March, everybody's favorite segment of Legion of News. Coming up next hour, Mr. Aaron Duran with The Weekend Geek. We'll also talk with music editor from The Oregonian, Mr. Ryan White. Geek Watch, Nazi Watch, recap of last night's episode of True Blood. Also recap of last night's episode of Breaking Bad, which continues the big run of awesome. Also, Dawn's going to talk about sluts, and I'll talk about indefinite articles.
And a heartfelt and enthusiastic appreciation of all of our month-to-month subscribers. Because we love them so much.
Is that happening now, or are you doing that next hour?
No, I'm going to do it next hour.
Is it going to be a poem?
I got an email.
Okay, because I'm
somebody was mad that we were paying too much attention to the annual subscribers and didn't say anything nice about the month-to-month subscribers.
Well, I'll say this: they pay more. So there you go.
They do.
The monthly subscribers, they actually pay more over the course of a year. So that's
right.
Nice. I mean,
so we're gonna give
nice
them
to
a separate thank you.
That's okay.
Because we made somebody mad. 36 years after Richard Nixon testified to a grand jury about the Watergate break-in that drove him from office, a federal judge on Friday ordered the secret transcript made public. But the 297 pages of testimony won't be available immediately because the government gets time to decide whether or not to appeal. The Obama administration opposed the transcript's release, chiefly to protect the privacy of people discussed during the ex-president's testimony who are still alive. Nevertheless, U.S. District Judge Royce Lamberth agreed with historians who sued for release of the documents that the historical significance outweighs arguments for secrecy because the investigations are long over and Nixon has been dead for 17 years.
Sure he has.
Nixon was interviewed behind closed doors near his California home for 11 hours over 2 days in June 1975, 10 months after resigning the presidency. Two grand jurors were flown in, and the transcript was read to the rest of the panel sitting back in Washington. It was the first time a former U.S. president testified before a grand jury. Bill Clinton became the first sitting president to do so during the Monica Lewinsky investigation. At the time of his testimony, Nixon could not be prosecuted for conduct related to Watergate because he had been pardoned by President Gerald Ford. 10 days after Nixon testified, the grand jury was dismissed without making any indictments based on what he told them. Historians now say the testimony could address ongoing debate over Nixon's knowledge of the break-in at Democratic Party headquarters at the Watergate complex and his role in the
What is it we're still trying to suss out? Like whether or not he was a good guy, or to what degree he felt Jews were running everything, like just a little or a lot?
Well, I mean, I guess I can see the point if...
I mean, he's sort of on tape going, and Woodward and Bernstein, can we screw them too? I mean, what else is that we need to learn?
Well, it's kind of adorable in its way that historians actually want us to get like sort of the full truth.
Oh, I thought you meant that Nixon was adorable.
No. I think it's kind of adorable that historians want to get to the full and complete truth of anything secret that ever had anything to do with the government, as if that's actually, you know, really possible. I think it's kind of sweet that they still that they hammer away at that. I mean, somebody needs to.
I guess.
They should hammer away
at stuff we don't already know, I guess would be my thing.
Well, and I guess there's some stuff that, you know, we could hear about. I mean, he was questioned about the 18 and a half minute gap in the Oval Office tapes. He was asked about his use of the IRS to harass his political enemies. He was asked about a $100,000 campaign contribution from Howard Hughes. It would be cool to hear about all that stuff.
Are there any of these things that we can't just answer accurately right here in this room? 18 and a half minute tape. Did it intentionally.
I bet there's some...
IRS. Use them to screw all of his enemies.
I'll bet there's some really fun stuff about people he hates, though, in there.
Probably. No, see, that's the only reason I would want to hear it, is so I could just hear more, like, profanity-filled conversations where he's, you know, in the office with Billy Graham talking about who needs to get the shaft.
And also, I hate Shecky Green.
Yeah. Probably.
Put him on the list, too. I hate that bastard.
Yeah. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us.
I don't do Nixon.
You can get this. I do Shecky Green, strangely enough. You can get this program later today via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or LegionofNews.com. Here is Don Taylor.
Nearly two-thirds, 61%, of adults said drinking was their top choice after a stressful day in a poll for the industry-funded charity DrinkAware. When asked how they battle stress, yes, nearly two-thirds said that their top choice is drinking. Just over a quarter said spending time with their children helped them relax. And 26% opted for talking with their partner.
In other news, 24% of the public is lying about how much they like their children.
More women than men, 73% versus 26%, said stress was the main reason they had a drink at home at the end of the day. And more than two-thirds of women said they typically pour themselves a glass of wine to relax. Some 61% of women surveyed have two or more large glasses of wine on a typical night.
Well, do you think all the sluts just created themselves? They come from somewhere.
The same percentage of men drink at least two pints of beer on an average evening at home. Among those sexes, nearly two-thirds admit to drinking after a stressful experience, and 73% after a bad day at work. This compares to just 15% who said they drink after a great day, and 17% who hit the bottle after a good day at work. Of the 825 adults surveyed, only a quarter feel they drink too much on some occasions. So a psychologist specializing in personality and behavior said, when it comes to drinking alcohol, the way the human brain works means we are naturally disposed to find a reason to indulge, particularly if we've had a tough day. An example of this is having a drink or two at home after work as a way to unwind from stress. In this scenario, the brain has decided that stress is bad for us, and that alcohol, because it apparently relieves stress, is good.
The cure for and cause of all of life's issues.
Somebody actually got paid for that quote. I like that.
Listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm, here's Don Taylor.
President Obama has announced an agreement on a new round of fuel economy standards.
That's exciting.
It is. I'm making it exciting with my tone of voice.
Okay.
The president says this will boost the average for vehicles sold in the U.S. to nearly 55 miles per gallon by 2025.
These standards are going to be a win for consumers, for these companies, for our economy, for our security, and for our planet.
But what about the year 2525?
The president says it will be a big money saver for consumers.
Think about what this means. It means filling up your car every 2 weeks instead of filling it up every week.
And so is it? He sounded like he was sort of not sure of his math there at the end. Week, carry the one? Crap. Get me a whiteboard.
Well, 2025 is 14 years away. I have a crisp $5 bill if anyone wants to bet that in 2025, we will not be driving cars that get 55 miles per gallon.
Well, the thing is, here's what I don't understand, is we were driving cars that got like twice the mileage we get now 25 years ago.
Yeah.
I don't understand how that's possible. I don't believe that it's like, I don't think it's like some big grand cabal conspiracy. I really don't. I think that there's probably another really dumb and stupid human explanation for it. But I don't understand when cars started to get like 17 miles to the gallon. That was not the case when I was first driving, you know. And I don't mean that gas prices were different because I was young and the ice wagon came by and whatever. I mean, literally, you used to go and look at cars and it would say like gets 35 in the city, 39 on the highway or whatever. And now that is not the case. So I don't know where that went. I mean, what is up with that?
I have no idea. It might have something to do with catalytic converters and air control quality
standards. When you go to get gas, do you still tell the guy you want unleaded?
I do.
Yeah. Okay. I'm sorry. That's right. He doesn't want a whiteboard. He wants a blackboard, not a whiteboard.
Let's do our entertainment.
That's my fail right there. He wants the blackest of boards. I'm sorry?
Entertainment.
As your entertainment news for Monday right here at Legion of News.
Some might criticize their 23-year age gap, but Aaron Johnson, an actor who appeared in the movie Kick-Ass, and his
child bride?
I don't know if they're engaged. His fiance, Sam Taylor Wood, are still going strong. They're expecting their second child together. Johnson, who is 21, and 44-year-old filmmaker Taylor Wood will soon welcome baby number two. The couple are engaged, already have one child. Taylor Wood also has two daughters from a previous relation with art dealer Jay Joplin. Johnson, who starred in Taylor Wood's John Lennon biopic, Nowhere Boy, addressed the couple's age gap last year by saying, "I've got a wonderful woman. I'm an old soul, and she's a young soul."
Wait, so who's old and who's young in this story?
The woman is older. The filmmaker woman is older. The actor is younger.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah. American Idol Season 3 winner Fantasia Barrino announced on Sunday that she's pregnant with her second child. She broke the news to a crowd at a Jacksonville, Florida concert saying, "I share this with you because I can relate to you. And for a while, I walked around figuring what they will say and what they will think about me. But now I tell you, I don't live my life for folk."
Mm-hmm. For folk.
I think Fantasia's a little bit crazy.
All right.
That just didn't make any sense at all.
Hey, FYI, in case you were wondering, the Model T got 30 miles to the gallon.
Hey, let's go back to that.
All right. So maybe
you have to crank it up, though, don't you?
You pay up
like
$3 of that $5 for them.
NBC is going to business with the producer of King in the Hill in a bid to move into primetime animation. NBC Entertainment Chairman Robert Greenblatt said a major production deal with Greg Daniels will include various types of programming but emphasize animated series. That's a market Fox has cornered so far with shows including The Simpsons and Family Guy. Daniels is behind NBC shows including The Office and Parks and Recreation. And Greenblatt says he's eager to get back into animation since co-creating King of the Hill for Fox. Greenblatt said was a development executive at Fox when the then-fledgling network helped build its schedule with The Simpsons. Greenblatt is formerly with the Showtime cable channel. He joined NBC last year as the network's ownership passed from GE to Comcast. British Member of Parliament Louise Mensch has apologized to Piers Morgan for implicating him in the News of the World phone hacking scandal. The Conservative MP claimed in July 19th parliamentary hearings that Rupert Murdoch and his son James that Morgan was fully aware of and, in fact, a participant in the phone hacking. Mensch wrote a letter to John Whittingdale, the chairman of Parliament's Culture, Media, and Sport Committee, to officially recant her statements against Piers Morgan, explaining she misread news coverage based on Morgan's book, The Insider.
Her name is really Mensch?
Her last name is Mensch.
Wonderful.
Morgan, who has maintained he was not involved in the phone hacking, accepted Mensch's apology via Twitter.
Okay.
Everything's done via Twitter. Jonathan May Bowles has confessed to throwing a shaving cream pie at Rupert Murdoch. The 26-year-old part-time stand-up comedian, who calls himself Johnny Marbles, hurled the pie at Murdoch during a July 19th parliamentary session addressing Murdoch's involvement in the News of the World hacking scandal. Appearing before the City of Westminster Magistrates Court, Johnny Marbles admitted to assault and causing harassment, alarm, or distress. Johnny Marbles is set to be sentenced August 2nd and was warned that an arrest warrant would be issued if Johnny Marbles failed to show up to his sentence.
I love Johnny Marbles. I dig that guy. I like everything about him.
Johnny Marbles echoed Murdoch's remarks before Parliament when he told the court at the preliminary hearing, "I would just like to say this has been the most humble day of my life."
Johnny Marbles sounds like the guy in the gang that, that the audience knows you should never give the job to.
Right.
And that they give the job to anyway, and then he amazingly screws it up.
"Don't tell anybody we're doing this, Johnny Marbles." "I won't tell anybody, boss. I won't tell anybody.
I don't know nothing."
"Okay, we're trusting you, Johnny Marbles." And you're going, "Don't trust Johnny Marbles."
Yeah, no.
Jerry Lewis does not like reality television. The star of Encore's upcoming Method to the Madness of Jerry Lewis, a documentary about the 85-year-old comedian's life and career, took aim at weight loss reality shows and the contestants who try out for American Idol on Friday at the Television Critics Association Summer Session in Beverly Hills. "The kids they get on American Idol, they're all McDonald's wipeouts. They all worked there, and now they're doing that."
"What with the trying out and the singing and the dancing and the hey-hey and the oh, I've fallen."
"We don't have the soul in our industry that we had when I was working in it," he continued. "The soul has been desperately deteriorating only because you got a guy running a network whose aunt died and left him some stock."
Also, Judy Campbell. What a dish.
The longtime host of the Jerry Lewis Muscular Dystrophy Telethon said he finds himself disturbed by the state of programming across the networks. "I don't allow people in my family to use the term TV. It's television. It's a miracle. It's entitled to respect," he said. "We ran home to see Milton Berle on Tuesday night. Nobody wants to run home and see anything anymore. The industry has destroyed itself, and we can fix it." Jerry also took aim at entertainment's new modes of accessibility, like being able to watch movies on mobile phone devices. "You gonna put Lawrence of Arabia on that stupid son of a bitch? That gets me crazy."
That's awesome.
He said.
I love guys like that. He just doesn't care. Doesn't give a rat's ass.
He also said Jim Carrey is the most brilliant physical comedian we've ever had.
Well, he's old and on drugs,
he's
though.
He's 85 years old.
What do you want? Percocet.
Yeah. And that's all the entertainment.
There's
news.
Your entertainment. It's good to go out on. Good to go out on Jerry, huh? There's your entertainment news for Monday, right here at Legion of News, Cascadia.fm. Don't forget, you can get it later on today from iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or LegionofNews.com. Coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program today, Geek Watch, Nazi Watch, Mr. Aaron Duran with The Week in Geek. Also, Ryan White, music editor from The Oregonian, will be joining us. And we'll also have recaps of True Blood and Breaking Bad from last night and other tales of amusement.
Pittsburgh police say a man tried to carjack a plainclothes officer near filming for the latest Batman movie and allegedly told him it was part of the script. Detective Robert DiGiacomo was in an unmarked vehicle around 7:15 p.m. Saturday looking for a suspect in an assault. That's when police say a man opened his car door, sat down, and told the officer to get out. The officer drew his gun and ordered the suspect, 21-year-old Micah Kalamuska, out of the car. He says the suspect told him he was part of filming for The Dark Knight Rises and that taking the vehicle was in the script.
Well, that's an interesting excuse, though. I mean, that's novel, at least.
Kalamuska was taken into custody and faces a charge of robbery of a motor vehicle.
I wonder if he came up with that on the fly or if that was his plan all along.
Probably.
I mean, if that was kind of like what he was aiming. He's like, no, it's perfect. I saw it in a movie once. It'll work.
Yeah, I think the only problem with it was that the car he tried to steal turned out to be a plainclothes police car.
Still. I mean,
and
you know.
Who's to expect that's going to happen?
Honestly, I mean, how would he know?
Yeah.
How would he identify it? No way to tell.
And then he just stuck with the plan. He stuck with the story he'd already planned.
Change horses midstream, Don.
A swarm of bees who made a vacant house their home became so aggressive that neighbors were trapped inside their house. This happened in, Pittsburgh.
Okay.
I can't remember. Oh, this is somewhere in California. It's in California. It's outside of Sacramento. I remember this story. It's in the suburb of Sacramento. The bees apparently became agitated when a bee remover started getting into the walls of the house to take the hives out. It would seem that the house had been vacant for a while, and no one in the neighborhood was aware that the walls were filled with bees until the bees started to become a problem and someone came to remove them. Meg Helton, who lives across the street, was trying to get her family into their car so they could go on vacation.
I got one of my children in the car, but the other one got stung about 20 times, she said. Her family retreated into the house. The beekeeper left after being stung 20 to 30 times, even though he had a protective bee suit on, and said it may take a week to complete the job. A local news reporter named Lonnie Wong was stung at least half a dozen times in the face while trying to do a stand-up outside the house.
This is like trying to get rid of Lithuanians. It's exactly like this.
Lonnie Wong said, once I was stung, they seemed to target me. They kept coming after me even though I walked a block away.
Yeah.
Neighbors called the sheriff's department because the bees were so aggressive. There might be further attempts to remove the bees today because they've become a safety hazard. Frustrated neighbors first reported the beehives to officials back in April, but it was not until this Friday that the homeowners finally scheduled beekeepers to remove the hives.
So they were living in the walls of the house?
Yes. And apparently have been multiplying and building bigger and more intense hives since at least April.
Well, this is what happened. Okay, then really the upshot of the story is that all of our homes could have walls that are filled with bees.
Well, I read the story to Patrick this morning, and he had seen something on the news just a couple of days ago, and I couldn't find it, so I don't know where it is. But there was somebody's house. It was actually new construction, too. So the bees apparently moved in as soon as the house was built. And there were so many bees and such dense hives in the walls that the walls were actually leaking honey.
Which is, I mean, on the one hand, you think that that's like you've gotten into the world's tastiest haunted house.
Yeah.
You know, well, look at this. The Virgin Mary keeps crying sorghum. And, you know, and then you go, ooh, but what's that buzzing noise? And then it all goes south on
you. If it wasn't for the bees, having walls that leak honey might get irritating after a while if you want to, like, say, hang a picture.
Yeah, but I mean, think about it. You just take your toast and just give it a good swipe on the wall and you're good to go.
Honey.
It seems like they mind their business, you mind your business.
Wasn't Honey Walls that song that...
Close.
Okay.
But, you know, but a little honey between friends, you know, hey, what are you going to do? As long as the bees got theirs, you got yours, everything's fine. And then you just, you know, and it's like having a roommate you don't like. You just sort of, you know, you just try not to be home or awake at the same time. Everybody wins.
Okay, no.
Leave the bees alone.
If you use Microsoft's Internet Explorer to browse the web...
Oh, no, I don't.
Good, because if you do, your IQ score is likely to be lower than someone using Firefox, Chrome, Safari, or Opera. A new study published by online psychometric testing company Aptiquant Psychometric Consulting Company.
Aptiquant. Okay.
Found that a user's choice of web browser is related to their cognitive ability. There was a clear indication, they said, that the subjects using any version of Internet Explorer ranked significantly lower on an average than others.
But by the way, the people using Internet Explorer 8 are the dumbest of all.
Oh, see, they said of all the versions, subjects using IE8 actually fared a little bit better IQ-wise.
That's just wrong.
People using Opera, Camino, and Internet Explorer with Chrome scored slightly higher than their Internet Explorer using Friends. But
what is Internet Explorer with Chrome?
That I don't know.
Is that like it's like a mashup of the Google thing and the Microsoft?
Maybe.
That's like having a mayonnaise soda.
But there was they said that basically this suggests that people with a lower IQ tend to resist a change or upgrade of their browser.
Yeah, well, they just use whatever's handed to them. I mean, which is, you know, and if you get a Windows box, they just hand you the Internet Explorer, the massive bloatware that is IE. IE8 is like the worst thing. It's worse than cancer. I mean, it's the worst thing in the history of things, sort of.
Also, apparently there's no significant difference between the IQ scores of people using Chrome, Mozilla Firefox, or Safari. It's just on an average notably higher than people using Internet Explorer.
I gotta tell you, like half the websites you go to, you have to have a separate version built just for Internet Explorer 8, which is not even the current version of goddamn Internet Explorer anymore. But you have to build an entirely separate version of the site just to work with that browser. Maybe because there's, you know, X number of people out there that go, well, this is the thing that came with the clicky box that I got, and so I guess I'll just keep using it. That's the little sound they make afterward. You got like 45 seconds.
We do.
If you want to do something else.
Do something else. Okay. Police arrested a 41-year-old man Saturday biking downtown in a town called Middlebrook with an axe in his hand covered in his own blood. Patrol officers saw the man biking down the street at 7:20 p.m. He was covered in blood, carrying an axe. There was no victim involved in the incident, police said. Lawrence Alfred Cartwright has been charged with possessing a dangerous weapon. He was held in custody, expected to appear in court later. He has an extensive criminal record and is known by police. He's also been a vocal poverty activist and has spoken publicly about his years of drug addiction. There is no mention, by the way, in the story of where all the blood came from that he was covered in while he was riding a bicycle.
Is it his own blood?
Carrying an axe. It doesn't say.
Okay, why would they leave that part out? Is it like, do we have to subscribe to get the rest of the story?
I'm sorry, it does. Covered in his own blood.
Well, that's still...
But it still doesn't explain how that happened.
It seems like if you bled enough to be covered, you wouldn't be bicycling. Well, what do we know? All right.
See,
well, we'll go out on that mystery.
It's a big mystery.
It's the new D.B. Cooper, though. There you go. And with that, we end this. Today's episode of Legion of News. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, Hive of the Milk Packing District in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, Advanced Technology, Magic Provider, Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Eigler, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa, who says, quote, I use Internet Explorer, so shut your face. Okay. Well, I'll do that here in just a moment. Don't forget the Rick Emerson radio program coming up next hour. Geek Watch, Nazi Watch, Mr. Ryan White, music editor from The Oregonian, and Aaron Duran with The Weekend Geek, plus True Blood recaps, Breaking Bad recap, and Don Taylor talks about sluts. That's all coming up next hour at rickemersonshow.com. Thank you for listening, and we will see you again tomorrow. That is Tuesday at noon for another episode of Legion of News. Have a safe and satisfying Monday, won't you?